With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Welcome back to Greenwash. You're here with Jaspreet and Dawn. If you remember last week, we had a couple of ladies come on to Greenwash from Capiticam, Calm, Alarmist, Law Madness, who were talking about a public meeting that was due to happen last week now, on the 14th, if I'm not wrong, about the coastal hazards and the process that's been going on there for well over a decade now. And it's probably the bane of existence of people who are affected by this. But today, to talk more, we have an old guest. When I say old, I don't mean old. I am sorry, Salima. What I mean is a guest who's been here previously. I have Salima Padamsi here, who's chairperson of CRU, Coastal Ratepayers United. And she's been an absolute trooper. You set up CRU in 2012, Salima, and you've been fighting this thing for over a decade. Welcome back to Greenwashed.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure. Now, so you were in the audience last week, Salima, on this public meeting. What were the numbers like? And what was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, so I received a personal invitation from Calm to attend as chair of CRU. And I came with a couple of my committee members. Mm-hmm. There's about maybe 350, 380 people that
wow.
attended.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just people that were really needed information, wanted to understand, were just confused, and weren't getting information anywhere else. And this was the place that they could come, hopefully, that was the point, that they could understand what was going to happen to them, to their homes, coastal adaptation, all of it. These are all new terms, so many people in our community.
Yes. And yet, the process is not new, though, is it? As I said, it's been going on for over a decade. You've been here before as CRU. You have had nearly a decade ago, based on modeling, hazards being marked into the LIMS, the Land Information Memorandums of Properties on that coast, which,
correct,
when challenged in court, were removed. And now they're back again.
In a different format, but they're there, mm-hmm. Yes.
So 380, 400 people, for me, that sounds like quite a good number.
I think it shows that people are interested, that they need to know. And I think it also really shows Calm's commitment to engage with the community, to inform people. And I think what it becomes is, if you've got a community organization that can get that kind of level of engagement on a shoestring budget, and prepare all those presentations, get people to come. And yet, throughout the process of the coastal adaptation engagement process, that hasn't been able to happen. They haven't been able to get those numbers of people. They haven't been able to notify people. They haven't been able to inform people. And so when these girls are from Calm, when they are, you know, they've got magnificent logistics in informing people, people take notice because they're like, whoa, I have never heard of this before. So they're hearing about something that could affect them, their property, their mortgage, their insurance, from a community organization, when it is really the council's obligation to inform affected homeowners.
Yeah. Isn't it? And yet we have citizens have to take it upon themselves and just literally go out like detectives looking for information, as you have done darkly over a decade. Now, your website, Salima, of CRU is crew.org.nz. But for the purpose of our chat today, I'll be referring to the Capiticam website. That's capiticam.com, and more specifically on their blog, because they've done it really well. They have updated the notes from the meetings, the one that happened last week. And more to the point, they have put up audios of various speakers talking. And for me, that was really handy. Individual speakers, I could just go and click on that bit and listen to it. And I think let's try. And you had councillor and mayor come in as well?
Yes, we did. We had the mayor attended, and I really want to say that That was incredible. It was really good of her to attend. There were so many people, and I think that they really did want to hear from her. And it was good on her. It was very good. She really proved that she had mayoral responsibility, that she took it seriously, and she attended. And it felt maybe like a harsh environment or a lion's den that she was walking into. And so, well on her. She did an amazing job in putting her position forward for us to understand in terms of how council is going to proceed or what their position is on these issues. But we also had Councillor Glenn Cooper, Councillor Martin Halliday, and I think Councillor Nigel Wilson were there. And I do want to say before you play that we are very, very lucky to have an organization like Calm, who is so dedicated. And I know the hard work it takes to organize something like that, and I can't imagine how many hours and hours of work they would have put into that. And so I think without them, this kind of knowledge would have been lost in the community. So I'm really grateful that they've been able to do that for Calgary.
Absolutely. These sort of things take on a life of their own, and it's endless, the grind, isn't it? Long unpaid hours there. But your mayor there is Janet Holbro, and I'm going to see if I can play a clip of her speaking at the event that Calm had last week. So here goes.
By law to prepare for the future. Across the country, councils are and have been for years analysing risks, informing the public, creating plans and rules which future-proof communities. The challenge, though, is to bring communities along with us. And the turnout tonight shows me that we haven't done that as well as we could have. Can you hear me out? Do you want to hear me out, or would you like me to stop?
There's a bit of heckling there.
There is.
Yeah. And that is, as you said, good on her for standing, standing her ground and going on with this talk. Hopefully there's not too long a break here.
Yeah, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you. So after that first meeting I talked about, the council tried to introduce measures fast. And after an independent report and lengthy and expensive court proceedings, the slate was wiped clean and the process started over, this time with an independent community panel and extensive community engagement. And that's the process we're now in. And it's a result of the mediation that happened through the courts with Crew.
So this here that she's talking about, the independent panel that's been set up there, is the SCAP, is it?
It's the Coastal Advisory Panel. Yes. That's led by Jim Bolger.
So they have taken on the job. It has sort of been, as I spoke to the Capity girls last week, Don and I, it's been outsourced to this panel to sort of help the community find their way and, have community engagement. How well has that been going, Salimas, the second time around? Because the first time, we know the community had to go to the court, get that removed, and after that, this panel was set up.
Right.
What was the feeling now?
Yeah. So just to backtrack a step. So a core responsibility of the council is to engage with the community. It's to consult with the community. And by setting up this coastal advisory panel, they outsourced that responsibility. And so and with it came a lot of problems. And Crew has never had any confidence in the CAP process. With the combative nature of Mr. Bolger, calling 200 people conspiracy theorists because they challenged the science or the way that they were moving forward. So it hasn't been done well. And I think for them, a community engagement is just box ticking. Yep, we had a meeting in Otaki, we had a meeting in Paraparaumu. Done, done, done. And I don't think that anything that people have said have really been taken on board, because one of the biggest issues that this community is having is with the science in the Jacobs report and the using the implausibility of well, RCP 8.5. And that's been said over and over and over again by Calm at the July meeting last year. But it's just falling on deaf ears, along with many other things. So it's really a box-ticking exercise and not genuine engagement.
Yeah, and by their inference and by their tardiness, they've actually created such a damaged environment, haven't they, really, in terms of private property rights, insurance risk, all sorts of stuff has put so much uncertainty in the air at great cost. I'm struggling to reconcile how ratepayers have been so, I don't mean this disrespectfully, passive to date, because generally, when people know the truth of something, they react. And the reaction, it's coming to the fore now by the look of it. But I can't believe the council has got away with this damaging sort of approach to date. And it's come at great cost, I gather. Aside from the personal cost, I gather council has spent millions on this so far, employing consultants and plus their own staff time, I imagine.
Yeah, and plus the panel is paid. So you're looking, I think we're looking at in the range of maybe $3.5 to $4 million spent
Holy.
to date by ratepayers for this process. But people are busy. They have families, they have children, they have shopping, they have elderly parents, they've got sports days. And unless you make them really aware of the situation, it's going to pass you by. You know,
Sure.
you'll
And
see something in the paper, you won't even know it's about you.
of
Totally.
course, you have been of the mind to trust the people that you've elected and trust those people to make sure that the management of the council is bringing meticulous information to the councillors themselves, let alone what comes into the public eye. So, yeah, it's mystifying why they think it's okay to be almost playing with their community. Good that Crew and Calm are holding them to account.
Well, Calm has filled that gap that council should have filled in terms of engaging and communicating. They've actually filled that niche that council should have been doing.
But this exemplifies the problem, doesn't it, Don and Salima? When you outsource democracy from the core council functions and it is paid to another group outside whose funding depends on them carrying on the work, how do you stop that train?
Yeah,
You
good
know,
question. Good question.
how do you stop that train when you've created something for the explicit purpose of finding a solution to a problem which may or may not exist, and you're paying them for it? Well, yeah, nobody likes to cut themselves off a dollar or a dime if they can get it.
Oh, reports on reports on reports come at great cost. And yeah, you're right, Jaspreet. The gravy train of reporting doesn't matter what level of consultancy, whether it's the very biggest consultant, largest consultancy firms in the world to the smallest. Everyone is, yeah, if there's an opportunity, they ain't going to turn it down, are they?
There's a handout everywhere.
And so, Salima, who double checks the veracity? Who reviews the science that this American firm called Jacobs delivers to your council or to this coastal advisory panel on the sea level rise and the risks to properties? Who checks them?
Well, to date, no, nobody has checked them except Crew. So they've had a, well, they call it a peer review. I will call it a PAL review. It was their pals at BECA that reviewed Jacob's work. And I think if you want to do a proper peer review, then you go to somebody who's willing to challenge the premise of your work. But here, that hasn't happened. So I wouldn't call it a peer review. And I know that the Greater Wellington Regional Council science staff member has also had a review of it, but it's not a peer review. And that's what happened in 2012 when we received the Shand report. We were also very weary of the science that was in that report, and that hadn't been peer reviewed. And finally, when it was peer reviewed, it was found to be not fit for the purposes of planning. And that was a proper peer review. So this hasn't gone through a proper peer review. CRU has put a review, a critique of where we found that there were issues that needed to be addressed. And again, those just fell on deaf ears.
But
like the first time in 2012.
So you have one consultancy firm, Jacobs. Its work being peer reviewed by another external consultant, Becker. But whatever this modeling is, and based on this very, very flawed RCP 8.5, the model that the United Nations itself said last year should not be used, it, so whatever in their imagined, Armageddon, doomsday, it's, we are all going to be destroyed soon. We're going to be underwater. Even if that's imaginary, even if that never comes to fore, it is having real life ramifications for people today, isn't it? And
absolutely,
that's where lies the problem. The problems might be imaginary, but the impacts are very real. And could you outline some of the impacts that this flawed science is having on people and their properties?
Right. So the first real impact is the high levels of stress. You know, people are stressed. People's homes are their biggest assets. You know, they're not buildings. It's where they live. It's where they take care of their families, where they make memories. So thinking that something's going to happen to that, first of all, causes huge stress levels. I mean, and a lot of Kapiti are elderly people. And so these are also the people that are feeling that kind of stress. So then you're looking at the possibility of insurance, not getting insurance for your home because you're within a adaptation area. And according to Jacobs, within 30 years, you know, the sea level will rise so far that, you know, within 2 kilometers inland, Kapiti will be all water. And then so your insurance, you know, are risk adverse. So that's going to be an issue. And then, of course, if you can't get insurance, the issue then becomes remortgaging your home. And if you sell your home, you have to also let them know that you're in this zone. And you may not be able to buy it because a bank won't lend you to buy a house in this area. So it has a kind of a roundabout effect. But the biggest one is the level of stress that it causes on people, the impact on the community. And that's why Calm had almost 400 people come to that meeting, because they are stressed and don't know what's going on.
So is it already, have there been instances of homeowners not being given, not being having insurance anymore?
Yes. Well, actually, at the meeting of Calm, they put on their slide an email from Tower Insurance to a resident of Kapiti, which said that they wouldn't be able to insure their home because of coastal hazard.
Incredible.
So this is not the insurance company itself assessing it. They are saying it's because of the council having it.
They're saying
there?
It's a coastal hazard. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get a lot of detail from the girls. I didn't get time to speak to them about it.
Right.
But I mean, it was in black and white from Tower that it was due to coastal hazards.
Right.
Gosh, do you see the similarities here, Jaspreet, with significant natural areas that we've talked about with previous guests and lines on maps and the damage that it does to property and the ownership? It seems unbelievable that in 2024 any landowners would have to be subjected to this. What can we do to help support areas like Kapiti? I mean, we've got great people like Salima and Tanya and Carrie doing their work, and Sean Rush and others. But this is nationwide, isn't it? This is heading to the nation around the coastal areas of a fair chunk of our country. So I don't know. We've got a lot of work to do. I would like to think that the government could set put out an edict to say, look, everything has to be paused, a bit like the SNAs, and that everyone has a deep breath. But moreover, I'm just thinking about this as Salima and you're talking, I think the $4 million spend, or $3.5 to $4 million spend, needs full interrogation. It says to me something weird is going on in here, and every dime needs to be accounted for. I can't believe you can have documents and costs and effect this far-reaching without the community having a proper say in the process and having some clear ownership of it. Clearly, this has been taken away from the community, in my belief. So I'm just putting that out there. None of this seems fair, and it's taking so long to get to the nub.
Imagine being in a fight or flight mode for a decade, like some of the people would have been, Salima, over there.
Yeah, well, and so it's round two, isn't it? So, you know, just going back to the issue of insurance, so I've brought up minutes of March 2024 of the Coastal Advisory Panel. And in the minutes, it talks about insurance. And one of the CAP members says, he reported a story of properties that insurance companies were withdrawing from. And another one says that there is already one insurance company that would not insure on the coast. So they are very well aware of the impact of their work.
Well, I think what I might do is at this stage, Salima, I might play a bit more of the mayor's speech there and listen to see if we can get the concerns of a couple of ratepayers there in the district speaking up. And here goes.
Red flag that you are not matching up with your words, and I respect your words. And I think that would be a very easy thing to do. There's no law that's stopping you to do it. There's obviously no law that allowed you to put it on either. But unless you want, you're most welcome to agree to that here now, but you probably need to consult with your CEO to find out how long it would take. But I think it'd make a lot of people feel that there's a meeting of minds here.
Yeah. So after the last CALM meeting, or it wasn't a CALM meeting, it was a community board meeting where CALM attended, that's exactly what I did. The first thing the next morning, I asked the group manager responsible for this area, can we remove that from LIMS? Can we just do that? And her reply to me was that no, once we have the information, we are legally bound to put it on the LIMS. But, wait. Looking at the chief executive, what I am going to ask for tomorrow is a second legal opinion on that, so that we know for sure that is a legal requirement, and we will share that opinion with the people who've put their emails on the list, so that you can see why if it comes back confirming, you can see why that has to be on the LIMS. And just to confirm,
can I say something, please?
No. Yeah, so just to explain, it's not just decisions that need to go on LIMS. As soon as we have any information pertaining to that property, we are legally bound to put that information on the LIMS. Now, all we've got...
So there you have the mayor talking about the fact that the moment you have identified a hazard, you have to put it on a LIMS report. And, you know, there's someone questioning that, why don't you just remove it all if the science is flawed? But that's what happens with these desktop exercises, isn't it? You have essentially encroached on private property rights based on some very shoddy science.
So the problem here is twofold. One, there is a blanket LIMS on everybody's LIMS.
Blanket.
So every single property owner in Kapiti has the same LIMS notation. And that notation talks, you know, it's a paragraph and a half, but what it says is that they will be using Jacobs for the purposes of district planning. So it explains that they've done these exercises, and so every person, every Every household. So everyone's got it. So it's not just me or my neighbors or those affected. Everyone has it. And so what that means is that you're not identifying those people that are affected. And so that's what one problem. The second problem is that if that report is being contested by CRU or by COM or other groups, then there needs to be a real honest way of looking at it. And I'm going to read you a quote from an article in the Capita News of March 26, 2014, just after the Mike Weir case. And it was written by Kay Guru Nathan, who was then a counselor and then became a mayor, but he had an opinion column at the time. And he says, and I quote, "The judge in the Mike Weir case had directed the council to work with Mr. Weir on an acceptable wording. If the science behind the hazard line is lacking, the information may not be accurate and legally cannot be left in the limbs." So if till that resolution, until we can sort out if Jacobs is meeting the threshold for district planning, it really should not be there.
And it's as simple as that, isn't it? When you boil it down to the essence of it, that's all there is to it. We are not yet, the science is, you know, the jury's still out on the science. How can you be altering people's limbs? Right. And yet they are.
And there we go. And in another article, same author, March 19th, 2014, April 2013, four counselors had moved a motion to drop the hazard lines from the limb reports, but a compromise was agreed to for the establishment of an independent science panel, unquote. And that independent science panel found that the report was not fit for the purposes of planning. And as a result, Justice Williams wrote in his ruling, "Council resolved to remove the lines from all limbs because they did not meet the criteria for mandatory disclosure."
It's unbelievably convoluted, isn't it? It's he said, she said, no one sort of really wants to know, take ownership. It's a strange, strange way of presenting a community with information, isn't it? It's just erratic.
Well, the Jacobs report, I think, runs, I can't remember now, I think 300 pages, and it's incredibly technical. And no one in their right mind would ever want to sit down and read it. And we're still expected to understand it. And when the people who do understand it do read it and they raise concerns, it falls on deaf ears.
And you'll have to, looking by the sound of this, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, Salima, that looks like this is going to have to head to court again like it did the last time.
Well, we're trying to avoid that. And, we have just been told earlier this month by council that they are proceeding to do a district planning change for the coastal hazard risk chapter. So that is what we have been asking for them to do since 2016. They promised the court that they would do it in 4 years. So let's be generous and say 2021. And they were hoping that the CAP process would lead to a district plan. Unfortunately, we have now an email from the CEO, which states, coastal adaptation areas are not hazard areas, nor are they relevant for district planning purposes. Which means now they are actually going to do the work they were meant to do that they promised the court. And it looks like they've got timetables. They're seeking applications now from the 10th of May till the 10th of June, and they will be selecting a provider. They have deliverables in place. So a version of the plan change will be issued for feedback no later than the 28th February of 2025, and including a Section 32 report. And it will be publicly notified no later than the 30th of July. So they're 5 years late in delivering it, but it looks like they are interested to deliver it now. That cap will no longer be part of the district planning process, which then beggars the question, what was the purpose of cap?
Oh,
I'm actually speechless, Don.
I am too. I am too. This is
This
just,
is.
this is as intense as it gets. I mean, imagine, Joe Citizen following this. You've got to take your hat off to people like Salima and the other ladies we've interviewed on this matter. I mean, you've got to be tenacious and you've got to clearly understand the processes. I would wonder, and quite often I've been around organizations that have senior management changes when things get a bit rough. Salima, it seems a bit off topic, but has there been many senior managers on this case through the years you've been involved? Has it been from pillar to post with management?
Well, it was until last year, and we had a new CEO. So I think that has had a positive impact. And we've also had a new second group manager for group manager strategy and growth, who has also been a welcome change to crew, because until she came along, we couldn't get a meeting for almost 3 years at council.
Did I hear that wrong? How do you don't manage to get a meeting for 3 years at council? What
Because
how are you fobbed off for 3 years?
we just don't get a response. We
You mean
write emails.
your emails they go unanswered?
Correct.
Well,
It's gobsmacking, isn't it, Jaspreet? I can see you on the other side of the screen here, and we just got our mouth wide open. This whole thing seems beyond any common sense. It's just beyond the pale.
And it's not a secret. I gave council written updates regularly in the last triennium saying I've emailed on this date, I've emailed on this date, I've emailed on this date, I have no response, I have no response. And again, it fell on deaf ears. And what I think is very interesting is that we have always said that coastal hazard is a statutory obligation of council. Coastal adaptation is not a statutory obligation of council. And these two things are very different. And now the CEO has confirmed that they are indeed different and that adaptation will not be used for district planning purposes. But then that leaves the question, will they be using the Jacobs report for district planning purposes? It's now on all our limbs.
That for me, that pretty much says they are using it.
Well, I have asked the mayor at that meeting. I was given a chance to pose that question to her.
And what response did he get?
Well, I asked, will you be using the Jacobs report for district planning purposes? And the response was, we don't know yet. We haven't started the district planning process. All we are doing is receiving the cap recommendations, which may or may not feed into a future district plan process.
I'll hold
So
my tongue at that.
that's even more confusing because the district plan process has already started. I just read you the dates and what's going to happen, the Section 32 report, the date of notification. And we have an email from the CEO that says cap is not involved in district planning process. So it's just more confusion. If my members are confused, I'm not surprised because I myself I'm left in a state of fogginess about all of this.
It's quite a circular process, isn't it? It's just going round and round, and
What decades?
yeah, quite inconclusive. But the damage has already occurred. You have to feel for the landowners in the Kapiti area, Jaspreet. But like the farmers with SNAs on their properties, these lines on maps, these discussions are all designed to weaken the property right. Well, and I say they're all designed, they do weaken the property right. And that's the problem.
And even the Jacobs reports, they are not conclusive. I mean, most times the ones that I have seen, not referring specifically to Jacobs, consultants often cover all the bases, saying that might, would, possibly, you know, we don't suggest that this should be used for X, Y, Z, and you use your own judgment. So no one is actually held accountable. But meanwhile, Joe Citizen is just being buried under legislation and these red tape bureaucratic nightmares.
Yep. So
it's really hard to believe, you know, and if we could sit down and actually have a conversation. But I think that when you are critical of, in this case, Jacob's report, you know, my husband taught me a saying that this year, play the ball, not the man. And so when you go and you are a bit critical, you're being played the man and not the bull. So, you know, you're called a climate change denier. You're called, well, Jim Bolger called us bullshitters, you know, conspiracy theorists to 200 people, you know. So instead of sitting down and having a constructive discussion on the issue, it becomes personal attacks. And I think, how do you move forward with that then?
200 people, conspiracy theorists, concerned citizens. You know, that's such a convenient label, especially over the last few years. I've seen anything you don't want to address, label, dehumanize, deny, deny, and yeah, that's it.
I laughed at the. Sorry, go on, Salima.
Well, I have to really thank Mr. Bolger for using that term, conspiracy theorists, because that was the birth of Calm. And I am thankful that they are here.
Good job, Jim. Hey, just interesting, at the end of that meeting, it was very funny. I mean, your mayor was very quick off the mark when I think about 24 minutes, 53 into that recording, there was a question about the WEF instigated sort of programs. And the mayor basically said, well, you know, basically you better ask the WEF and get the answers. I thought she was very quick-witted, but the question was pertinent. Interesting. I'd encourage people to go and go into the Calm website and listen to this audio. It is interesting. People under pressure, people under stress, they say stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, we've had far longer than we ever anticipated with Salima. I've feeling we probably had too many gaps in this discussion where we're sort of gasping.
It's surreal, Salima, to believe that this is happening. 10 years ago, citizens go through this process. They go to court. They get everything undone that council did. And here you are 10 years later, back in this. Looking back, you set up Crew in 2012, Salima. What?
Well, I, along with a group of people, I was just one of the founding members at the time.
Yeah, you're a powerhouse there. I'll still say you set up Crew then with a group of people. But what would be your biggest takeaway through this process?
Exhaustion.
Yeah, I
just
can see that.
Pure exhaustion. But I think we need a remedy. We were promised a remedy in 2020, and that remedy is now being promised in 2025. People are living in limbo, and that level of stress just doesn't help. And so my takeaway would be keep going. I mean, we can't let it end like this. We can't walk away now if it's going to come to an end in 2025. Or, and then, of course, if that doesn't work, then we have no choice but to take legal action. I mean, we are in the middle of finalizing our report with Waikato University, which we engaged independently. We raised money within our own group to engage Waikato University to actually give us a coastal hazard risk assessment in line with the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement. And that meets the threshold for district planning purposes.
Not a report by Jacobs. That's upended everyone's lives, led to
and
stress.
We welcome anyone to peer review it. We welcome anyone to peer review it.
And that's how science should be. You let yourself out there and you let, you know, the cards fall where they will. That's the scientific method. That's how you test rigor. But here you are, it's like an open and shut case, an outsourced panel being funded to the tune of millions of dollars, and citizens have no say. All I can say is, Salima, thank goodness for you. Thank goodness for you, for the crew at Crew, and for the crew at Capiticam, that you are keeping this fight going on for as long as you have, because I listened to your mayor's speech very carefully. And more than once you said, and this is happening all over the country, you're not the only group fighting it. You might have been the first ones off the block a decade ago. But whatever happens here, the rest of the country will be taking note, because this is exactly what we are facing. The same insane, you know, RCP 8.5 being used in climate change modeling everywhere, up and down this country.
I think at CREW, one of the reasons we're so lucky is because we have a whole bunch of experts, really smart expert people that live out here who are willing to give their time for free, because they also need to see a sense of justice. They need to see that things are done right. That why not be an honest broker? Why wouldn't you want to use the right signs? Why wouldn't you want to deliver something with a community buy-in? Why would you want to alienate? These are all questions that we don't understand the answers to. But at CREW, we are lucky. We've got amazing group of people that give an amazing amount of time to get things done right for the people of Kapiti. And I think, you know, once in a while, it wouldn't be so hard for the council to acknowledge that and accept that, you know, we have a track record. Let's have a constructive discussion, but, you know, play the ball, not the man. And we're not there yet.
Yeah. So what's next after this meeting last week?
I don't know for Calm. I don't know what's on their agenda. But I do know that we are finalizing the Waikato report.
Yep.
And that we will be working on that. And then we will take next steps. We'll have a strategic planning meeting to decide what next steps we will do with that report. How to use it and to ensure that other communities are also able to have it, to understand what a proper coastal hazard risk assessment should look like, not what the consultants want it to look like.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's been amazing to listen to, Salima. I know, as Don said, there have been gaps, and that's just because I've been sitting at times stunned like a mullet listening to you and seeing what, you know, what is going on here. This makes no sense. It's such a Mickey Mouse sort of a way of doing things. But thank you so much for your time today. And listeners, if you want to go and listen to or even read the transcripts, the slides from the meeting that the Kapiti Calm group had last week, please go to their website, Kapiti Calm. It's just as it sounds, kapitikalm.com/blog. And they have uploaded everything, all the material from that evening here. And go and have a listen, because as a few speakers said, this is not an isolated case. We are a coastal country. Most of us live not very far from the sea, wherever you may be. And it is coming for many of us. That I know for sure. Right on.
Yeah, true enough. Hey, so thanks, Salima. And look, we hope to get you back for an update as soon as you can give us one, because this is an issue that, as Jaspreet says, is close to a lot of hearts, and you're putting all power in your area to get this resolved. And let's hope we can have it spread around the country and get this nonsense nipped before it gets too far ahead of itself.
Thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you.
Good luck, Salima. And yeah,
thank you.
All the power to you.
All right.
Thank you so much for your time.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.